Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for stopping by today to listen in. We are going to talk about some physical conditions that are the result of regular, everyday activities. That's one of the things we're going to focus on today. I know there's going to be, I'm sure, questions about sudden injuries or trauma, but something called carpal tunnel syndrome is unfortunately affecting many people. And our two guests for today, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, know a lot about it and have some, I think, good information for you and for me as well. Lori's Tyne Brody is a physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Laura, great to have you back.
It's good to be here on a rainy Monday.
Yeah, and Bill Boisenault, thank you so much. Bill's a senior physical therapist at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. And as always, good to see you.
Great to be here, too. Thank you.
Well, this carpal tunnel, how much of that do you see a lot of it? And maybe we should talk about what it is, too.
Well, the carpal tunnel is there's a small tunnel in your wrist that houses a nerve as well as a group of tendons, and it's got bones on one side and a thick ligament on the other, and these tendons and nerve pass through this small tunnel on the palm side of your wrist, and it creates kind of a pulley for those tendons to work through. And increases their ability to leverage, but it's also a limited space tunnel. So if you get any kind of swelling in there due to arthritis or injury or tendinopathy, it can put pressure on that median nerve.
Yeah. Are some people, I mean, is it something that genetics plays a role in, or is it... Bill,
Well, one of the things, it does happen more often in women than men, and one of the thoughts is that for many women, the tunnel is smaller, there's less space than in men, probably just due to the structural skeletal anatomy in that area. And certainly different points of life, of the life cycle, women during pregnancy are at increased risk because of fluid retention. Sometimes around menopause, again, due to fluid retention. So anything, like Lori said, there's only X amount of space in that tunnel. And so anything that takes up that space can cause a problem over time. And as you mentioned, repetition can get a lot of people into trouble where it's more of an overuse, repetitive issue, like a lot of the other things that we talk about on this show.
Yeah.
But in terms of genetics, DNA, it's more, there is a difference between men and women, though.
And in fact, I have a good friend who actually worked here at Wisconsin Public Radio for many years. Monica Peck has had really debilitating.
Right. Well, there is a significant genetic component because you will inherit the tunnel size from your parents.
Sure.
So, you know, if one sibling has it, there's a greater likelihood that your siblings will have that as well.
And I see so many different kinds of stands around computers where people have their arms in all different kinds of positions at the computer.
You can't see Larry right now, but he's waving his arms in all different positions here in the studio.
It's amazing to me, and I assume that's all to kind of prevent carpal tunnel, you know, little padded things that you have to rest your wrists on or whatever.
Yeah, some of it is to prevent carpal tunnel. Some of it is to improve your entire upper body posture, your head, neck, and shoulder posture as well, particularly for people who spend hours at it. But the idea is to prevent your wrist from being flexed for long periods of times or bent in a palmer way. People often wake up with symptoms at night because you sleep with your wrist flexed. So similarly, if you're working at a computer, many of those adaptations are to keep you from having your wrist bent repeatedly throughout the day.
Are there other occupations where this repetitive motion business comes into play other than computers?
Yeah, assembly line workers.
Yeah.
Or again, it's the same thing, repetition over and over again. Painters, construction workers are another risk group. People do a lot of gardening, again, because due to the repetition and the posture position that their wrists are in. You can clearly see why it impacts the number of people that it does.
Yeah, you can see why anyone who has an occupation that requires gripping, you know, when you grip, it uses those same flexible flexor tendons that pass through that tunnel, and then you're going to have a tendency to also flex your wrist at the same time. So you're flexing and using those tendons, and when you use those tendons, they increase in diameter, effectively.
And what about, is there, I guess, surgery that can be done? What are the options in terms of working with it, maybe aside from surgery?
Well, surgery, the carpal tunnel release is one of the most frequently done surgeries here in the U.S., and they cut through the ligament and just kind of open up the tunnel to give it more space. But in the vast majority of cases, the hope is before surgery is tried, conservative care is attempted. And that can be a combination of medications, but rehabilitation has a significant role with these folks. As we described, we spend a lot of time educating people about their workstation, about their job, and how to decrease the pressure within that area anatomically. And it's also important to not just treat the wrist. Anybody who's receiving treatment for this, if all the care is directed directly at the wrist, typically people need their cervical spine examined, shoulders, their posture, because there's a lot of things up above the wrist and hand that can impact the health in that area. So, working in the spine clinic, I can't say I see tons of people, but I see people come in with these types of symptoms, pain, pins and needles, numbness in the palmar surface of the hand, the thumb, the index finger, the next two fingers. The median nerve that's in this tunnel does not innervate the little finger and the inside of the ring finger. So if somebody has pins and needles or numbness throughout the entire hand, including little finger, either they don't have a carpal tunnel at all or they have something in addition to carpal tunnel. So that's part of the challenge, is the differential diagnosis. Is the neck involved or not? Is it only a local wrist and hand problem? But ultimately, to change the mechanics at the wrist and hand, people need to be examined up through the trunk as well.
And you're not going to probably cure it 100%, but you can make it better?
Well, there's a large body of research on carpal tunnel syndrome because it is so common. The surgery is remarkably effective. And so when they do research and they examine people who have ultimately had surgery, the impact of the surgery is so overwhelming that any additional impact of rehabilitation tends to get lost in the research project itself. So we start out with conservative care to see if we can manage the symptoms with splinting, particularly at night, or splinting during activities to maintain the wrist in a more neutral position. As Bill said, examining the head, neck, elbow posture to see if there's anything there that's a contributing factor. Is it possible that they're overusing their wrist because they have weakness in their elbow or weakness in their shoulder girdle? So we may need to look more proximal to see if there's a reason and why they're overusing their wrist. So that, as well as the anti-inflammatory measures, are usually the first step to see if they can get symptoms under control. If not, then they often go on to surgery.
Well, let's take some calls. There may be follow-up questions about that, and, of course, other issues as well. And I see Ed from Iowa County is up with a question for you guys. But let's give that number, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. That's the title. And we'll get you up there. And I've got my screen going here now. So I think we're in pretty good shape for all kinds of questions. And let's turn to Ed next from Iowa County. Ed, thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate
sure.
the show.
Sure.
I have a very different problem, but similar to the one you're speaking of, and it's piriformis syndrome. It's the sciatic nerve, and it's been impinged by the muscle in the buttock. And I've had this problem for over 10 years now. I've done physical therapy. I've tried to enhance my strength and flexibility, and it's been impossible to shake it thus far. And I'm wondering if you have any other advice. I know there's some surgical recourses, but I have not taken that yet.
Well, you're right. It is somewhat similar to carpal tunnel, just a different body part. The sciatic nerve is made up of nerves coming out of the low lumbar and the sacral area. and the sciatic nerve then courses out through the buttock area, and there is what's called the sciatic notch, and the nerve is in that area along with some deep hip rotators, including the piriformis. And there's a small percentage of people where part of the sciatic nerve actually goes through the muscle belly of the piriformis. Ed, do you know if you're one of the percentage of people who has that anatomic anomaly?
We have not determined that yet. No, I don't know.
Okay. It still doesn't mean you're going to have problems, but it increases the impact that the piriformis can have.
Right.
So what kind of testing have you had done that led to the diagnosis?
Well, I've had an MRI to determine that it wasn't in the spine.
Okay.
And I've had some cortisone injections in the piriformis muscle that did result in temporary but complete relief, and that we felt helped diagnose the problem as the piriformis.
Okay. Well, those are the tests. You do want to rule out the lumbar spine, and if you get a local injection gives you relief, then it tells you where the problem is. So, Ed, I'm assuming the physical therapy you've had, they have looked at your back, your hip, the pelvic area, have done some neuromobilization, where you incorporate a straight leg raise as part of a stretch. Have those things all been done?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like you've had the appropriate rehabilitation, and so then I guess it comes down to how much is this interfering with your lifestyle? 10 years is a really long time, but it really is your neurological status. If you start noticing some frank weakness around the knee or foot and ankle, or numbness, frank numbness, where your areas of skin that just has dead sensation to it, that's when you want to really consider a more invasive procedure such as a surgical intervention. If it's simply pain, not that pain is any fun to have, then it comes down to what can you adjust or compensate for that posturally, position-wise, make sure your wallet's not in your back pocket when you're sitting, those kinds of things, and to lead to which direction you decide to go.
So, Ed, what kind of – is this a constant pain, or are there certain activities that bring it on?
No, it's not. It has varied a little bit over the many years I've had it, but the one time that it's consistent is very late in the morning, prior to waking. It usually wakes me. But after sleeping for some period of time, for some reason, it becomes very localized in the buttock. And I wake up then with sciatica as well, which usually goes away within a half hour of mild activity. The other activity that really irritates it is horseback riding, which is something I have a passion for. And after about an hour or so, it starts to get fairly extreme and limits my ability to do that activity. Long distance driving has on occasion been a problem too.
Yeah, I can see where the horseback riding would be an issue because you're sitting right on that sciatic nerve, and there's not a lot of flexibility in adjusting your position like it might be for, a bike where you could adjust the seat or something like that. So, and it may be that the constant repetition of the impact right on that sciatic nerve in your piriformis has caused some scarring in the area that's not going to be amenable to conservative measures.
Yeah.
Ed, in terms of waking up in the morning with it, what position do you typically wake up in?
Well, I try to sleep with a pillow between my legs on my side, and that was advised, and I usually accomplish that.
Okay. Yeah, I understand we do move around, and that's what I was going to recommend, a pillow or maybe two, because if it's your top leg and that leg is hanging down over time, it puts a bit of a stretch in that area and then can cause some irritation. So, try to keep the pillow or maybe even try a second pillow and see if that makes any difference for you.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. That's a tough one, isn't it? Daryl in West Salem, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I had a long honey-do list on Saturday morning. I bent down to do the first thing, and I just had a sharp pain in my back. So I spent most of Saturday icing and heating the spot, and now I'm kind of back. Or excuse me, my back is kind of into shape again. But I'm wondering if there's any exercises that you would recommend so that... this happens about once or twice a year, and I just want to see if there's something I can do to eliminate that problem.
Yeah, because you have a list of things you have to finish, don't you?
I was going to say, did she think you were just saying that? Trying to get out of that work?
I won't go there.
All right, very good.
And we won't either anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Well, it's a really good time to call, because what can happen over time, the incidents become more frequent and more severe. You know, as a general rule, to minimize pressure on the back, good hip flexibility is really important. So when you do bend and twist, the more your hips can do, the less your back has to do. And then a good core strengthening program to strengthen muscles all around the hips and the trunk also will help take pressure off the back. You know, and again, if consistently your episodes are brought on with flexion or bending forward, then hip flexibility back behind your hips, your hamstrings, and deep in the buttock area are real important areas to get at, again, to help take pressure off the back.
I was just thinking once a year, usually about once a year, and it just happened last weekend, and I'm actually feeling it a bit. I have water softener salt, so I'm carrying... Yeah. 4 times down 15 mm-hmm. or 17 steps, 80 pounds
right.
of bag
yeah.
or bags,
yes.
and
right.
then lifting them, you know,
right.
into the water softener and
right.
all that. That happens about once, I think, about once a year. Maybe it's a couple times a year, but anyway, that's sounds, you know, and
right.
it's similar. That's right,
similar,
right?
Yeah.
Right. So. So one of the things about an activity like that is, rather than carrying 80 pounds, one in each hand, you carry one, you know, sort of cradled across your chest. But to get back to Daryl, if you haven't seen a physical therapist for this, this is, as Bill mentioned, a super time to do that. One or two visits so they can examine you and find where your mobility losses are, what areas you need to work on increasing your flexibility, and where your strength deficits are. And many people who are physically active say, well, I'm active all day and I'm strong. And you may be strong in certain muscle groups, but weak in others. And sometimes it's that imbalance that creates excessive loads on your back or asymmetrical loads that that cause that back pain. And as Bill said, the episodes, as we see them, tend to get more frequent, last longer, until you get to one where you end up in the clinic. So it'd be better to go now and prevent that.
Yeah, good luck. Thanks very much for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. A question for our guests as we talk with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our physical therapist. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Net as we take a look at your physical condition. You got any aches and pains and sprains or strains? Now's the time to call Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic of UW Hospitals and Clinics. Lori, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. So wonderful to have them both with us. And call in or email us or go to our Facebook page and post a question or comment there. Bonnie in Green Bay has something for you guys. Hi, Bonnie. Thank you for calling.
Well, hi. How are you?
Perfect.
I'm perfect?
Yeah. I'm feeling pretty good today, except for a little twinge in my back from the salt.
Well, then you're in the right place. I wanted to share with you a history that I've had. Started out with sciatic nerve pain from the time I had a back injury back in 92. And it got to the point where my sciatic pain or problem or symptom was when I would walk anything more than a block, my left leg would go completely numb from the hips to the toes. There was no pain. There was no loss of muscle, strength. I could feel everything. It just was numb. I went to a chiropractor, and he did for me something that no one else had done, and I'd been to a couple of physical therapists in that course of 10 years. He used a procedure, I guess, so I'm not sure what we call it, or technique called active release technique. And he got rid of all of my numbness in my foot and my leg. I can do the entire Bellin Run, walk the Bellin Run, without any numbness.
That's great.
Yeah. Then, during this time, I knitted a sweater and for a little kid. I'm a pretty chronic knitter. And I developed pain in my hand, and I couldn't turn the ignition of my with the key in my car. And I went to see him again. He did the active release technique again on my hand, my arm from my about my shoulder all the way down to my hand, and I have not had one bit of pain from it since. And his theory was that the nerves are captured with like adhesions to the muscles from repetitive movement. And if you break up those adhesions, then you allow that nerve to move and there's not the pain. And I've been fine.
Yeah, good for you. Then you end up in the right place. And nerves need to be able to glide in and out of the spine and through the limbs as well, and including being able to glide between muscle groups and tunnels like carpal tunnel. And there are, for many people, if you can increase the mobility, that can make a big difference. And you're lucky, very fortunate that it hasn't come back, and hopefully it stays that way for you.
Yeah, that's wonderful, wonderful news. Active release, he called it. Thanks, Bonnie. Appreciate the you calling and telling us your experience. I want to give Gary and Appleton a chance to join us as well. Gary, hi to you.
Hello. Physical therapists have done wonderful things for me in the past, and this is a very valuable show. My issue is I must have a nerve impingement, and sometimes I get nerve numbness kind of running down the top of my arm down. Sometimes it'll run down to the top of my hand, you know. So I notice if I'm tying off a wastebasket and I'm leaning forward and my head's a little bit forward, that's it causes it to go numb. If I pull my shoulders back and my head up and... Initially, the doctor thought it was a T2, I guess, in a neck, and so they put me on physical therapy, but they said it couldn't bend from the neck because what they done should have made it go away. But now I'm wondering if there's, some sort of a nerve or an adhesion on a nerve and muscle to hold them together so they have this problem. And I know they've given me a couple of muscle relaxants, and that really made quite a difference, but it's, you know, it's sort of a temporary measure. Mm-hmm. I was wondering what kind of stretches or whatever you might suggest for this problem.
Well, the fact that your symptoms change with your head, neck posture or position really connects this, what you're feeling into your arm, to your neck. And the T2 is the upper part of the upper back, and in essence is also part of the neck. Again, I think this is, especially with the numbness, it would be good to see a physical therapist and have them examine you. And they can check for the nerve mobility. There's different nerve gliding tests, neural mobility tests, and they would also examine your neck and upper back and your arm to see if, in fact, there's different areas along the nerve where the nerve can get irritated and lose its ability to move. But again, the fact that your symptoms are tied to head and neck posture certainly implies that's the culprit area, and usually that can be changed fairly easily with the appropriate program. And they would give you things to do, both related to work around the house as well as any type of exercise that you do on a routine basis.
I should mention I went to osteopath, and they sent me to PT, mm-hmm. and they ruled out the neck. But I noticed if my shoulder goes forward, if I'm looking in the mirror when shaving, when I put my arms forward or I bend down, that's when it seems to come. And if I pull my shoulders back, it kind of goes away. And so, but the fact that the PT, looked at me and said I went through a couple of things. I said that wasn't the problem.
Yeah. Well, you could, as Bill said, you can get nerve entrapments anywhere from the neck all the way down to the fingers. So sometimes you can get entrapments in the shoulder itself. It's called thoracic outlet. And so some of the nerves that come out of your neck can be can get caught up in your shoulder or around your shoulder, your clavicle. So it can they can get entrapped in there. So your shoulder posture will affect the symptoms down your arm in that case, but not be precisely coming from your neck. So, I think you need a little further assessment to get a better picture of where it's coming from. And then perhaps some of those nerve gliding techniques that Bill mentioned can help release that nerve.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Thanks, Gary, for calling. I appreciate your call, and good luck. Randy in Sauk County, your turn. Hi, Randy.
Yeah, hi. See, I wonder if the guests have heard of this therapy that was done on me back in 1980 down at the university. I had increased my dairy herd size, doubled it really in the spring, and by July that year, my hands just went dead. And I had thought it might be because of the iodine in the dip or outer wash or whatever. But it just got to where I couldn't even grab a pencil. And the doctor sent me down to the UW, and the specialist that came in did something that was just incredible. He hooked me up to a machine that actually, and he told me it's going to be painful, but he said if you've touched electric sensors, why, you're ready for it. And so I said, oh, my goodness, I hate that.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I know that feeling.
But anyway, he did this to me. And he said, well, the side of my little fingers on the very side was completely dead, both of them. And then the other, he found these echo patterns, and you could see the nerves up in my arm jump when he would hit that charge. And actually, what he said is, there's some research that shows that it can be actually therapeutic as you start to do the things that will eliminate the swelling in the carpal tunnel, and I'd never heard of that before this, but I would actually go down there, and he would do that again, and you could see that nerve fat taking that charge faster, and my carpal tunnel went away probably in about a month. It's never been back. Of course, I've been careful since, and at night he gave me these really strong frames that held my hands back, like you're resting your chin on your hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, hats off to the UW. I don't know what they do.
the electrical fence test.
Yeah.
Actually, there's a couple electrodiagnostic tests that are relevant to carpal tunnel. There's a nerve conduction velocity, which gives the practitioner the idea of how well the nerves are functioning, and then the EMG tied to muscle activity. And they give great information about the nervous system and where along the path that the irritation or the compression may be taking. And what you describe with the night splints are a very common part of the treatment program for this. As Lori mentioned before, a lot of times we end up sleeping with our wrists and hands kind of curled in, and that puts a lot of pressure within the carpal tunnel, and over time can cause problems. So they were using that test to monitor the status of those nerves and showing the recovery based on the things that you were doing at home. And it's great that it hasn't come back at all for you. But those tests are still used, yes.
Oh, they are.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So there you go. They're still in use, Randy. Thanks a lot for calling. That was fun to hear about that. Probably not so much
fence
fun.
Test,
yeah, the electric fence.
I'm sure there's a number of people out there who have undergone these tests. They often use these for sciatica as well.
Oh.
To examine the nerves coming out of the back, the nerves coming out of the neck. EMG and nerve conduction velocities are relatively common tests.
Well, Bridget and Seymour has a question, so let's turn to her. Hi, Bridget.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
And I've sat on my problem now for, since 2007. I've got the stenosis in my neck, and they originally diagnosed me with the C456 stenosis was causing the numbness in my fingers in my left arm, and the fingers and my left arm, just the thumb and the forefinger. And we had a MRI done, so I was fairly certain that's what the problem was, but the result is a surgery through the front of the neck. And I'm not real happy about going under the knife that way. But then he diagnosed me, the same doctor, said, well, it's carpal tunnel.
Yikes.
I couldn't figure that out.
Oh.
So I don't know what to do.
Well, it's sometimes it's difficult to determine what the source of the nerve irritation is because the symptoms can be very similar. So, you know, the median nerve comes from your cervical vertebrae. So if you have cervical stenosis, the problem could be originating at the neck with your stenosis. It could be entrapped somewhere in your shoulder. It could be entrapped at your elbow, or it can be at your carpal tunnel. So that's where those electrodiagnostic tests come in, right, because they figure out where the entrapment occurs.
Yeah, I would agree. If you haven't had those kinds, the electrodiagnostic testing, that would seem to be the next route to go. Because as Lori said, sometimes you get problems in both areas. And in whatever conservative care you've had, you'd want to make sure that they addressed your neck, upper back, and all the way down to that hand, to see if that can help reverse some of the symptoms. So it sounds like you didn't have it's good you didn't have the cervical fusion at that time with the diagnosis switching. But if you haven't had electrodiagnostic testing, that might be the next place to go to help determine which area is causing the biggest impact.
Yeah.
Well, can you have carpal tunnel problems twice? Because I had them repaired in 2004.
Well, you can. It doesn't happen often. Typically, when they open up that tunnel, people generally have a good result, and there's not a big recurrence rate, but it doesn't mean that it can't happen. So, you know, I think Bill brought up a good point, and that is, you know, both as clinicians and sometimes as patients, we kind of see the world as black and white, that it's either carpal tunnel or it's your cervical spine. It's one or the other. But very often, these kinds of things coexist. And the question is, what percentage of your symptoms is originating from your neck and what percentage is coming from your carpal tunnel itself, and figuring that out so that we know where the correct place to direct our primary treatment is. And we'll probably treat both to some extent, but we really need a little more information first.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
Well, thanks so much for calling, Bridget. Appreciate your call. We have more callers online. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234 with your questions or comments. So Gary in Fitchburg has something for us next. Hi, Gary. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I've had surgery on L5-S1, and it was a mistake. It should never have been done. The problem I had that caused this back issue was a torn labrum about 14 years ago as a result of a yoga injury, and it was undiagnosed, misdiagnosed, and then about 5 years ago, the labrum detached all the way, and now I have just terrible problems with that left buttock area, hip area. I walk with a bit of a limp now, and it throws my SI joint out constantly, and I have to get on a Yamana ball and try to pop the SI joint back in. Is there any repair, probably not at this point, of the labrum? And I'm open to input from you folks.
Well, have you seen anyone about the hip? This is in your left hip, I take it?
Oh, yeah. I've seen too many people to count. And,
okay.
Everybody missed it, and the hip has been diagnosed numerous occasions. I was told at one point I probably needed a new hip. But we've done injections and everything. The hip appears to be fine, but it's...
But the labrum is still giving you trouble.
Well, there's terrible pain there all the time, and like I say, I have this problem with throwing the SI joint out.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So, and you've talked to the surgeon about potential repairs at your hip or repairs for the labrum?
The labrum is calcified, it's turned to stone, so
okay.
They said there's nothing to do.
Okay, yeah. All right. So then there isn't a surgery for your hip at this point in time, and what you're left with is treating your symptoms, modifying your activities, you know, things that sounds like the things that you figured out what to do to keep your SI joint as healthy as you can. And, you know, it's good that you're doing these things and trying to maintain your mobility at your hip, because I guess at some point what the surgeons are telling you is that, you know, there will be a hip replacement in your future. At some point that calcified labrum will wear on the head of your femur that make in your hip joint, and you'll probably get some deterioration at some point, and you'll end up with a hip replacement. So keeping your low back strong and flexible, keeping your knee strong and flexible, your hips and your core muscles strong and flexible is going to be the best that you can do to maintain the health of those tissues.
And if, would it pay? I mean, they probably couldn't do it, but would it pay to have the hip surgery or the replacement right now?
Probably not, because there's a limited life expectancy on it. So, you know, typically they tell you if you're looking at a joint replacement, you get it done when the bad days are winning out over the good days.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you can you know, control your symptoms and still do, you know, things that you generally want to do, perhaps with some modifications, it's best to delay it as long as you can. Otherwise, you're going to be looking at a revision at some point.
Yeah, okay. There we go. Thanks, Gary, for calling, and good luck to you. Appreciate your call. Talking about carpal tunnel and a whole lot more in the way of aches and pains and sprains and strains with our two guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, both from the University of Wisconsin, Bill with the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, and the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic, Lori, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Larry Mueller here with our on-air producer, Cheyenne Lentz, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, taking a look at your aches and pains and dealing with them. Our guests today, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Call at 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Anne Louise in Madison up next. Let's see if we get her there. Hi, Anne Louise.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My problem is a talus tendon rupture, and it's probably been going on for 5 years, and it was probably diagnosed about 3 years ago. And just a little history, I first started off with physical therapy and then also saw a surgeon. And the surgeon said the physical therapy would be of no use at all. So then the surgeon retired. I got another surgeon, and that surgeon said, well, you don't have enough pain that I think you should have surgery right now. So what I've been doing, I've had different AFO braces, knee-high to begin with, then half knee, and then also orthotic. So if I'm, like, mowing the lawn or something like that, I wear the full knee AFO. But my question is, water exercises seem to help. The braces help. But if I do a much more activity, and I'd like to not be a couch potato here for life, I do have quite a bit of pain and difficulty getting up, like off the couch after I, you know, have done these activities. So I'm wondering if it's worth considering physical therapy, squeezing a ball again, doing something like that, if that might help if I'm not bad enough for a surgical candidate.
What do you think, Laura?
Can you clarify for me what tendon this is?
The talus tendon.
Talus tendon.
Yeah.
Where about in your ankle is that? Talus is a bone.
Well, I cannot medially rotate the left foot inward.
Okay. All right. So it's an inverter.
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you call it? Inverter?
It's one of the muscles that inverts. There's not a talus tendon, so we're just trying to figure out which tendon it is. And if she's wearing an AFO,
right.
Yeah, it's probably the ankle dorsiflexor and inverter.
Inverter, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So what kind of things can you do? You could probably ride a bike.
Yeah.
Should be an activity that you can do. And, you know, I would say certainly if you haven't been in physical therapy for a while and you feel like you need to kind of review where you're at, I think one or two visits to PT to look at what strength you have, what your mobility has, what your gait looks like, and especially looking farther up your leg, looking at your hip and knee to see if there's anything we can do there to help control your foot. Because as your foot hits the ground, you know, it sets off a chain reaction of muscle activity farther up. But there's also an effect from top down, from your hip and knee can also kind of control your foot. So just getting in to retool those exercises and maybe updating them to what your current status is would make sense.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Ann. Sarah in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I have a herniated disc, and it's S1, which has been treated with physical therapy, as well as I've had two corticosteroid injections. And my question is that I've sort of hit a plateau with all of the therapies. I definitely had significant improvement, both with physical therapy and with the injections, but I'm at a standstill. I am not sort of continuing to get better, and I'm wondering where I'm going to go next with treatment.
Okay. So, Sarah, what kind of symptoms are you still dealing with?
Right. So I still have pain in my left buttock, and I get these kind of twingy pains that are hard for me to describe, but I always know that they're that, as well down my leg, mostly the back of my leg. And then my foot. I have, in my left foot, I still have pretty significant pain, as well as sort of intermittent numbness.
Okay. And exercise-wise, what kind of things are you doing right now?
Mostly just walking. This all started during pregnancy, and I have a now 14-month-old. So I'm active with my children. I have a 5-year-old, too, and then walking. They recommended that I continue doing some of the water aerobics that I was doing before this started, but I find that the resistance in the water is actually very painful for me.
Okay.
So I have not been doing the other activities that I was doing.
Okay. All right. You know, especially with, well, childcare, again, anything that requires us to bend forward increases the pressure in and around those discs. And it's not, you've had this for a long time already. You know, there are exercises that are designed to get symptoms up out of the leg. We call the pattern of numbness and pain moving up out of the leg toward the back centralization. And so we work on people in terms of ability to arch backward. We do what's called side glide and standing. Again, to get the pain symptoms up out of the leg to the back. Once they're up in the back, then the treatment program should be very different, where we more aggressively work on stretching out the hip. We do some neural mobilization, gently get the nerves gliding better, as we described earlier today, and then core, a lot of core work. So does that sound like things you've had done over the course of your care?
It absolutely does. Yes.
Okay. So, Sarah, do you consider yourself to be a pretty flexible person? Not your personality, but
right. No, I don't.
Okay, because some of your symptoms, particularly if they started during pregnancy, are related to the relaxin and excessive connective tissue mobility. And sometimes for people who are hypermobile to begin with, then you add that on top of it, and it creates problems. So sometimes we see that it gets set up in pregnancy, and then it just gets perpetuated by your activity levels. So how you design the program, particularly in the water, really varies depending upon your underlying mobility issues. So,
right. And my physician did suggest that, you know, given that I'm still breastfeeding, I'm still having the relaxin hormone released,
right,
that this would sort of prolong my my recovery.
I agree with that, and that it kind of sounds like that to me. As soon as right. you said pregnancy, it kind of sent me a different direction.
Yeah, there we go.
So your exercise program may need to be retooled based upon that. I mean, we would be hoping you wouldn't still be having symptoms in your foot this far out. So sometimes it's not what exercises you're doing, but it's how they're being done that makes a difference. So when people are not getting better, rather than saying, well, are you doing this exercise and this exercise and this exercise, really need to kind of look at how you're doing it and mm-hmm. modify it for you, because your body's different than other people's.
Yeah, there you go.
So if you haven't been back to see the PT again, you know, maybe go back or maybe see a different PT so that they uh-huh. don't bring the previous knowledge or whatever bias they may have
right.
had from your previous treatment to that episode and do that as a next step.
That's a good idea.
A spine specialist.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good luck, Sarah. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And Mustafa in Greenfield, it is your turn. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, folks, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have pain in my elbow. It started a couple of months ago. I drive for a living, so I drive sometimes 30 to 40 hours a day, and this is in my left arm. And the pain goes up and down from the elbow itself. It goes down toward my hand and up close to my shoulder. Right now, the symbol action of holding the phone to my ear makes my three fingers, the lower fingers other than the thumb and the index finger, numb. My son-in-law, who is going to start fellowship for rheumatology, told me just take some ibuprofen. So I've been popping like three pills totaling 600 milligrams in the morning and at night. Of course, I take them after a meal, but I'm concerned. And usually, it just makes the pain go away for a short time, and it comes back again. What should I advise, and who should I see?
The area that you're describing, I mean, it could be a combination of your neck, also the ulnar nerve, which is a different nerve than involved with carpal tunnel. It's your left arm, correct?
It is.
Okay.
I rest it over like the armrest while I'm driving or, you know, by the window sometimes. But I've been doing that all my life.
Right.
I don't know why all of a sudden.
Right.
Yeah. Well, sometimes if we rest our elbow on the handle inside the door, that puts pressure. It actually is called the cubital tunnel. And that's where the ulnar nerve courses through, where it runs through. And I've had other people where when they sleep flat on their back with their arms at their side, that puts enough pressure over that area where they wake up with their little finger and ring finger are numb.
Does to me too.
Okay. So you've got to get pressure off that ulnar nerve. So when you're driving, I would maybe have a small pillow that instead of resting your arm on the handle inside the door, rest it on the small pillow. Keep pressure off the inside of your elbow. Also, the fact that you've had this as long as you had and you're only getting temporary relief from the medication, like seeing a physical therapist to examine you, they would examine your neck. They can look at you at the elbow area itself and maybe give you some specific exercises up at the neck and shoulder area, talk about your posture while you're driving, and then they can also take a look at that area where that nerve is probably irritated and give you some good information there as well. And within a visit or two, they should be able to tell you, can they help you or not, and then set up a good program for you.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you, Mustafa, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Bob in Greenfield, let's turn to you next. Hi, Bob.
Hello. I was wondering about Chinese medicine balls. I had had a severe hand problem. I'm a letter carrier, and I had gone in. I was getting cortisone shots, and then I was taking a Tai Chi class, and the guy giving it, they asked, why are you doing this? I said, well, my hands are bothering me, and he said, Chinese medicine balls, and I used them, and I got relief. And I was wondering if you heard anything like that before, or is there like a reason why I got relief?
Tell us how you use the Chinese medicine balls.
What?
How did you use them?
I held my hands straight out, like as if just straight out, palms up, and I'd put the balls in my hand, and I would just spin them using all my fingers, and then I'd spin them the other way, and I just did it while I was watching TV for as long as I could, and then I started, because I wasn't using my right hand anymore, I had an apartment route, and I was always bending my hand to put mail in, my left hand started hurting, and I had the Cuervo's tendonitis, and so I started using it in both hands, and I relieved.
Okay, well, my guess is that it was basically strengthening. So if you're holding your arm straight out to the side, you're strengthening your shoulders, you're strengthening your neck, and you're strengthening the wrist flexors, which are the muscles that travel through the carpal tunnel, and you're doing it with your wrist straight rather than flexed. So, you know, from where I sit, it looked like a very functional kind of strengthening exercise for that. And so, you know, whether or not it was true carpal tunnel or whether it was a wrist and finger flexor tendinopathy, that it was treated with a strengthening exercise program that targeted your neck, shoulders, and wrist and hands. Yeah, so good for you.
Yeah, good for you, Bob. Thanks for calling. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests. They'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. We're going to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we will be back with our guests. You stay with us. We'll be right back. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here taking a look at all those aches and pains, or maybe they're sprains or possibly strains that develop, sometimes with me, sometimes with you, I will bet. And if you have some questions about one or more of those, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And we've had a number of Facebook questions. Judy sent us a note saying that she's suffering from impingement syndrome. And she says, as I understand it, it's the rotator cuff tendon. It scares me, and yet I'm having a problem completing the exercises given me by the therapist. Are there any daily activities that would help me, or should I, or any that I should specifically avoid? I've had this about a year.
Okay, so impingement syndrome is basically a syndrome in the shoulder where, not unlike the carpal tunnel, there's a limited amount of space. And in this case, it houses the rotator cuff tendon, the long head of the biceps, and a bursa, the subacromial bursa. So if you do repetitive overhead motions, which should give Judy an idea of what daily kinds of things to avoid, basically anything over shoulder height is going to impinge or pinch those soft tissues. So, and it will create pressure on those, and it does indeed involve the rotator cuff tendon because it's one of the tendons that gets pinched. So that being said, having this for a year, it's a really long time. Typically, rotator an impingement syndrome should resolve fairly quickly with the correct intervention. So she's having trouble completing her exercises, and then the question is why, and my guess is they hurt. So that tells me they're probably not the right exercises for her. There are some standard rotator cuff exercises that are often given. But if they're not working for her, she needs to go back and get the right ones. The longer the inflammation hangs around in her shoulder, the more difficult it is to get rid of. And once you get rid of it, the more likely it is to come back because of pathological changes that occur in the tendon and the bursa. So I would strongly suggest that Judy get back in and have her exercises reviewed. It may be that they're A, not the right exercises for her. They could be, or B, they could be the right exercises but the wrong dosage, or C, they could be being done incorrectly. So all those things need to be examined so that she can get over this.
And I would think pretty much any therapist should be able to help her with that. But the fact that it's a year, maybe seeing a PT who's a specialist with with shoulder or upper extremity types of injuries or conditions. And that could be in a in an outpatient orthopedic PT clinic or maybe in a sports medicine clinic where she could find somebody with that extra expertise.
Sounds like that'd be a good idea.
But in general, she's not going to want that inflammation hanging around for a long time. And she should not fear a cortisone injection. They don't inject the tendon, but they inject the bursa. And sometimes that beats the inflammation back enough so the exercises can be successful. Sometimes you can't get traction with your exercises because the bursa is so inflamed. So she really needs to get back in and be seen.
Carl in Black River Falls, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm 71 years old. I'm a diabetic. I grew up on a farm, squatted, milked a lot of cows. I have a sore left ankle. It's super sore. I have bone on bone. I have excellent insurance. It's been x-rayed and ultrasounded. They fit a boot to it, a two-piece boot, but I couldn't even get it on, so that never got used. Anyway, the ankle will collapse on me if I lean too far forward, but so far I've always been able to catch myself. They want to give me a cortisone shot, but that's just a temporary fix. And they also say they can operate, but after they operate, I may be worse off than I am now, and then I might not heal up and get infection. Any suggestions?
Have you been to physical therapy? Done any strengthening?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hang my leg over the edge of the bed, push the ankle forward as far as I can and back as far as I can.
Okay.
Run it under hot water as hot as I can.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Have you been there recently for a kind of an update and a revision of your program, or are these still the same things you've been doing for a super long time?
To the doctor and the ultrasound and x-ray within the last year.
Okay, but I mean the physical therapist.
No, it's been a couple years now.
Yeah, it might be time to revisit that and see if there's something new that you can do. And so I would suggest that because people change over time, your balance, your strength, your mobility, your pain levels, all those things change over time. So doing the same exercises that you did 2 years ago may not be right for you. So that's one thing. And the second thing is I wouldn't necessarily fear the cortisone injection. Again, you're already bone on bone. So if it controls the inflammation enough where you can progress your physical therapy exercises, sometimes you can start making some gains. What we often see is people's pain and inflammation prevents them from doing the exercise they need to do to get stronger.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Carl, if I could ask you, so this two-piece boot, so why can't you wear it?
I can't get it on.
Okay. All right. Because I would think that some sort of support would really help you, especially if your ankle is collapsing when you go in a certain direction. I would take it with you because I've had other people that are given braces and supports. It doesn't fit quite right. It can dig into the skin. It can cause problems. I mean, working with the orthotist to make they got to be able to design something for you that gives you some help. But it may take, especially with your bone on bone and probably the deformity you have in your foot, it may take some time to make sure it fits you right. But I wouldn't give up on that boot. But someone's got to look at that with you and tinker with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, because you've paid for that boot, and your medical professionals are assuming that your boot is working for you because you haven't shown up again with it. They presume that. So take it back and say, look, I need some help with this.
Yep, and good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Carl. Nancy and Bruce, it's your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had bilateral knee surgery 13 months ago. I had both knees replaced on the same day. And I went through 3 months of physical therapy with some success. I still had a lot of pain to deal with. Then I developed breast cancer and had to go through 2 surgeries and radiation treatment.
Oh.
So I had kind of a break in my healing of my knee surgery. Then I started going to the gym, and I was doing lifts and squats and curls, and I was determined I was going to get over this. And I think I was making it worse. I went back to the surgeon. The mechanics are fine. He said I had patellar tendonitis. So I quit doing all of the gym exercises. I now am just riding bike. I ride bike 3 to 6 miles every day. I do it either inside or outside. And I go up and down steps 8 to 10 times a day. But I have a great deal of pain getting up or down or doing steps. I can walk fine. I've walked as far as 10 miles a day without any issue. Once I get moving, everything works good. But it's just the pain that I have, and it's pain to tears, and I don't know what to do next.
And is the pain, did you say after you get up, after you've been sitting, or is it constant?
Trying to get up or to sit down.
So it's
and
that
it's along the sides of the kneecap and underneath it.
Okay. So they didn't replace your kneecap during the knee replacement?
I don't know if the kneecap is new. I don't think so.
So if you haven't been back again to the physical therapist, I would go back. Mm-hmm. So that there are some issues of your kneecap tracking, how it tracks as you bend and straighten your knee. So the good news is you can bike. Okay, so if you think about the motion of biking, it's the same motion at your hip and knee that you do squatting to sit down and getting up out of the chair. So the issue is not that your knee won't bend that far, but it's what happens as you weight bear during that. Mm-hmm. And so the mechanics of what happens at your kneecap change when you're weight bearing in that position versus non-weight bearing on a bike. So having the PT look at how you do that, where's your center of gravity over your base of support, what's your hip strength like? Getting up out of a chair and sitting down in a chair are a very hip dominant activity. So it may be that you're relying too much on your knees for that and not enough on your hips. So just a change in your mechanics may make a difference for you, because it sounds like you're overloading your kneecaps with that activity.
Yeah, and Nancy, I would avoid your stair climbing and going up and down. That puts a lot of pressure on the kneecap area, and if it's not tracking right, that can be causing some more irritation. And make sure when you're on the bike that the bike seat is up high enough. So, because if the seat's too low, then again, you have a lot of flexion, a lot of bending at your knee, which again adds a lot of compression in the area of the kneecap. But this is the kind of thing that the physical therapist can work with you. I think your intentions were great going to the gym. The squats may have gotten you into trouble a little bit, but they can really work with you.
More because I thought, well, maybe this is going to help if I can just get over the hump. But
So this goes back again to the really important issue of, it's not do I do squats or not do squats. It's not that I do stairs or don't do stairs. It's how it's done. So if the alignment of your foot, hip, and knee and your center of gravity and base of support is correct, squats and stairs are great activities for your knee. If those things are not lined up, then it's bad for your knee. So it's not squats are good or bad, but it's how they're done, which is why seeing a PT who can look at you doing it makes a difference.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks, Nancy, for calling. And Kathy and Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about intramanual therapy, IMT, a.k.a. trigger point dry needling. I have an issue. It's called DDD, degenerative disc disease in the cervical area. And I've gotten the pass from my doctor for this. I've been seeing a great therapist at UW Spine Clinic, and she's referred me for this. And I just kind of wanted some more information before making this appointment to do it. Any ideas on this?
Yes. Dry needling has been around a long time.
What is it?
You're using very thin needles. It's not acupuncture, but you use needles that are like acupuncture needles.
Okay.
And your trigger points are taut bands, painful bands in muscle groups, and especially up in the neck, our upper traps, upper shoulder area, and some of the muscles around the shoulder girdle area. It's not that the whole muscle is knotted up, but within the muscle you have these local tight bands that can be painful and can cause pain at a distance. And so one of the interventions is you do dry needling. You put this small needle into that tight band and you move it a little bit and you can get that area to let go and relax. And then the key is to follow it with some gentle elongation, some stretching, so the band just doesn't come back again. There's most of the therapists that I'm aware of that use this, whether it's at UW Hospital or in private practice, they've gone through some sort of a certification program. I'm sure the therapist at UW has referred you to somebody who's gone through the certification process. That just means they've gone through the appropriate training, know when not to do it, know how to do it, and what treatment to follow it up with. So, you know, if you sometimes the dry needling can help people get off the get over the first hump and start the recovery process. Some people make some progress, then they hit a plateau, and the dry needling can help get you off that plateau. But in the right hands, it can be a real effective choice of treatment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it may actually help. My big issue is the facet joints catch, and my neck. Well, my spine in the upper cervical area, it will actually lock into place, and maybe this will help.
Yeah, it won't do anything directly to the arthritic mm-hmm. changes that you describe, but if muscle often is a component of the either as a contributing factor or as the pain generator, and if you get the muscle to let go, it may allow other things you're doing for rehab to be more effective and certainly carry over to more comfort during the course of the day.
Okay, I just cannot speak highly enough of Tiffany, my therapist there. She's outstanding and has helped me immensely. So thank you so much.
It's always great to hear. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Kathy, very much for calling. And Mike in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Years ago, I used to sit at a Buddhist temple for 2 hours every morning on a cushion in a cross-legged yoga style. One day I got up to leave, and the pain in the from sitting that way didn't go away. It's been there like ever since. So the problem is on the tibiae of the right leg, the ankle tendons. Those two posterior tendons are very sore. Sometimes though, when I walk for a great distance, the pain goes away entirely. But then, of course, it comes back. So it was an enigma. I went to some physical therapists, but they thought, well, how can that be? Usually when you exercise at that place, they thought the pain should get worse. But instead, it actually went away. But it's reoccurring on a daily basis. So consequently, I'm wondering if you have any good tips for me.
So this is your anterior and posterior tibialis? Is that what you were saying? Okay.
Yeah, those tendons and that make noise when I walk sometimes, and they snap or crack or whatever they do.
So have you had a definitive diagnosis of what's going on with those tendons at all?
I went back, this was quite a while ago then. I went to the doctor, and they sent me to a physical therapist.
Okay. And they said you had a tendonitis or something?
They didn't say anything.
Okay. Okay. Well, you know, I guess I can only speak in generalities. So the question is, if you're sitting cross-legged Indian style, whatever, why you're having pain in one ankle and not the other? Because you were symmetrical, correct?
Well, even if I'm trying to recall... But when I got up to leave, the pain always went away. So I took it that it was, you're going to have a little bit of discomfort at the... But then it didn't go away on the right leg.
Okay. So the question is, what's different in the left versus the right? So if your physical therapist didn't examine you kind of from stem to stern, from your low back, your SI joint on down... then something there could have been overlooked. You may have a subtle leg length difference. You could have something in your SI joint. And then, you know, from then on, you know, we kind of look at hip strength to control foot posture. So if you're having symptoms in both your anterior and posterior tibialis, it makes me think that you're perhaps spending too much time in pronation. So we may need to look at your foot and leg posture all the way up to your hip to see if there's an issue there. Sometimes if you spend too much time in pronation, it's because you have either a true or functional leg length difference. So that has to be looked at. So, you know, if those things haven't been examined and you're still having symptoms, I would go back and see, either go back to the same people or see somebody else to have a reassessment. And, you know, body parts don't always follow, you know, what they're supposed to. So if it is a tendinopathy, it's not unusual for it to hurt when you first start using it and then to feel better as you loosen it up. So those are possibilities.
What expert do you recommend? A doctor or a physical therapist? What?
I go to a physical therapist. I would go to someone who has a specialty in orthopedics. I wouldn't necessarily say foot and ankle because I'm not convinced necessarily it's a primary foot and ankle problem. You have to have someone who's going to look at you really all the way down to see if they can find the origin of the problem.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And Diane in Elkhart Lake, do you have a quick question?
Yes. I'm a dental hygienist, and I'm having some tendonitis in my right wrist and thumb area. It's just on the thumb side. I don't think it's really any carpal tunnel. But it was, I was perfectly fine. And then all of a sudden I woke up one morning and man, was my wrist and thumb sore. And it went pretty much away during the day. Next morning, same thing. Next morning, same thing. So I went and got one of those thumb stabilizers.
Yep.
And I wear that at night now. But now it's just more of a constant tenderness and soreness. And I don't know, there's just one way I move sometimes, and it's like, ooh,
yeah.
Don't do that. And I did see the doctor, and they just told me to take Aleve twice a day, two Aleve twice a day for a while. But now it's staying around all day long now. And I just wonder.
And you can't have that in the
right,
kind of job that you've got.
Oh, yeah.
Work.
That just isn't going to work.
So when you say that you move a certain way and you get a quick something, is that you move your thumb or you move another body part?
It has to do with just the thumb and the wrist. And it's mostly if my palm is facing sideways. And I try to move my hand in a downward motion.
So sounds a little de Quervain's ish.
Yeah, I would say seeing a hand specialist at this stage, and especially considering your vocation, they could nail it down to exactly what the culprit is and maybe need a different type of splint, maybe an injection to get the ball rolling, but a hand specialist would be in order for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially given your line of work. But what we were kind of trolling for was seeing if it had to do with your head and neck posture because of how you position yourself and because you're waking up with symptoms in the morning, wondering if it had to do with sleep position. But it sounds like it's pretty much related to wrist and hand movement. So, you know, in a quick, you know, 60 seconds here, we're assuming that it's coming primarily from your wrist and hand.
Good luck. Thank you so much, Diane. I appreciate your call. And Bill and Lori, here we are out of time. Oh, my goodness.
It flew.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes. You're back on Monday, May 18th.
Indeed.
And we will look forward to that. Thank you so much. Bill Boisenall, professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, Lori Tyne-Brody, athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Great to have them along, and they will be back. Tomorrow, we'll talk with two pharmacists who have some questions, or will answer questions about prescriptions and drug interactions and a whole lot more. And then at 11:45, we take up the topic of child abuse. All that, stay with us here on the Ideas Network.